Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Ferguson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is Farm Credit Services of America, plaintiff versus the Dugans, defendants, and the Dugans are the appellants in this appeal. The appellants are represented by Mr. James Hurley, an attorney from Rapid City, and the appellee Farm Credit Services of America is represented by Mr. Timothy Engel, an attorney from Pier. Mr. Hurley, you may proceed, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. I am Jim Hurley of Bangs McCullough Law Firm of Rapid City, and I represent Dan and Beverly Dugan. Dan and Beverly Dugan are the appellants in this appeal. The issue is whether the trial court erred in granting summary judgment in favor of the appellee Farm Credit in the trial court below. The facts are basically as follows. Dan and Beverly Dugan and their two young children live on their ranch in Pennington County near Scenic, about 45 miles southeast of Rapid City. They are the third generation Dugans to operate the ranch. Dan's grandparents and his parents lived and worked on the ranch before they did. Dan Dugan has lived and worked on the ranch all of his life. The Dugans have annual income from wheat, cattle, and registered horses. Dan and Beverly Dugan began a banking relationship with Appalachian Farm Credit in 2001. Dan's grandmother died in 2001, and he inherited the ranch and also inherited the debt on the ranch. Farm Credit came in and agreed to loan Dan and Beverly Dugan money to pay off the debt that grandmother's estate owed to First National Bank. Farm Credit made up five term notes, and there were no demand notes. The Farm Credit Note 201 for $791,000 was secured by real estate, 7,600 acres of land, and has a term of 25 years, with the first payment of $55,000 due March 1st of 2002, as shown in Exhibit 1. Notes 151, 152, and 153 are all supported by or collateralized by personal property, machinery, crops, livestock, are each five-year notes. And note 101 is a revolving credit loan for operating and living expenses with a maximum principal amount of $100,000, which was due March 1st of 04. And those loans were closed out in the March and April of 2001. And the relationship began then between the Dugans and Farm Credit. Note 101, the operating note, provides that repayments of principal will be available for subsequent advances up to the maximum of $100,000, as shown on Exhibit 25. Note 101 requires interest-only payment annually. No principal payment was due until March 1st of 2004, and provides that interest not paid annual will be added to the principal and paid together with the principal March 1st of 04. The Dugans could not make the payment due March 1st of 2002 on note 201, the real estate note, because the tragic events of September 11th of 01 caused prices to drop dramatically for their performance horses that they raise and also for wheat. And also a severe drought plagued the area. The Dugan's area was declared a disaster area because of extreme heat and lack of rain. The area was short of water, and many ranchers had to haul water daily for their livestock. The drought cut production of hay crops and grass by at least half of the normal production. There were many newspaper articles at the time reporting that ranchers were having to sell their herds due to drought. These factors were beyond the Dugan's control, and they adversely affected their operation. They requested that Farm Credit reschedule the March payment on note 201 to October 1 to allow them time to see if they were going to have a wheat crop and if they did have a wheat crop develop, time to harvest and market and sell that wheat crop, and to hold a horse sale in the fall. Dugan's paid farm credit $11,991 for the extension, as farm credit requested, but farm credit only extended the note to May 1, a period of 60 days. We understand that's because the local FCS office could only extend for 60 days, but the Dugans understood that the higher-up offices would consider their extension request to October 1. Farm credit applied about $6,000 of that money to note 151, which paid it current to March of 03 into the next year, and also applied $5,900 to note 101, and on that note, it was paid then current to April of 03. And under the terms of that note, no payment was necessary on 01, but it paid the interest current.
So what do you claim is the genuine issue of material fact?
The disputed one.
What we see here, Your Honors, is that there are genuine issues of material fact. The trial court found in its decision that Farm Credit acted unreasonably toward the Dugans in a number of particulars. That is, of course, disputed. Farm Credit says no, not, and we say we do, and the trial court agreed with us. Which brings us to the next question, a question of law. The trial court was of the belief that the concept of good faith does not encompass unreasonable economic behavior, unreasonable economic conduct.
So was that a genuine issue of material fact, or is that a legal question?
That would be a legal question. But assuming that this court follows its holding in Mahan versus Avira St. Luke's Hospital, where this court held, I believe, that unreasonable conduct in terms of unreasonable economic decisions are encompassed within the concept of good faith, then we're back to the issues of material fact. What we say is that the Dugans had a viable operation. Farm Credit valued the assets at $2.5 million. They valued their equity at $1,500,000. Well secured. We're just the first year into a 25-year note on real estate. The cash flow is there in the form of a wheat crop, in the form of cattle income, and in the form of an inventory of registered high production horses. The circumstance that arose there in 2001 and 2002 was such that the Dugans needed an extension of time of 4 months to get from May 1st down to October 1st to see if they would even have a wheat crop because the drought was so severe, and even if they would have any hay to put up for the winter for the livestock. If they did not, they would fall in behind all the rest of the people that were covered in the newspaper articles of having to liquidate. But then that would be an act of God. It would be a drought situation. They didn't have water. They didn't have feed. They couldn't carry their livestock through the winter. They would have to liquidate. Or by then, they could see if perhaps they would catch a few fall rains and they would have a wheat crop, and they would have cash to give to Farm Credit on these notes, and they would have a fall horse crop or a fall horse sale.
Did they have any written agreement with FCS that that if there were conditions beyond their control, such as a 9/11 disaster or a drought or bad prices resulting from one or the other, that they would automatically extend in good faith to accommodate the borrowers and accommodate the repayment plans?
No, nothing that specific, Your Honor. In the contracts, being the mortgage and the promissory notes, Farm Credit is given wide discretion and wide latitude, words to the effect that at the option of Farm Credit, at the discretion of Farm Credit, and I'm sure across the state of South Dakota, we're all aware of many situations during that time period where payments were not made on time, and yet that discretion was exercised in accordance with good economic sense, and extensions were made.
Did Farm Credit give your clients any reason why they wouldn't extend the 4 months that they were seeking? Or did they just say no?
Just said no.
Mr. Early, is that the basis? I mean, that's the real essence of your argument, isn't it?
Yes.
The refusal to extend 4 months.
Yes.
If we were to adopt a breach of a good faith and fair dealing for refusal to extend, wouldn't that in essence preclude foreclosures, all the foreclosures say in the 1930s or as well in the 1980s, these types of you know, unknown situations occur all the time, and it seems to me that what you're asking us to do here is to say that a lender can't insist on the right to pay on time.
That's a very, very good question. It really goes to the heart of it. I think this court answered that question in part in Garrett versus Bank West. In Garrett versus Bank West, Jack Linus, working for Bank West, gave much latitude, gave extensions of time, advanced living expenses, advanced feed expenses, and it was clear then to both the lender and the borrower that the situation was not going to work, and an agreement was made to liquidate. Those kinds of agreements, we both seen them and we know them when we see them, they're based on good, sound economic sense. The same is true of this court's holding in Mahan versus Avira St. Luke's. The court there spoke in terms of language which makes a lot of sense. A reasonable decision, a reasonable independent decision, and an economically reasonable decision. In Garrett versus Bank West, citing the restatement of contract second and the comments, both A and E, the court talked about, or those comments talk about legitimate economic reasons. So I don't think anyone could argue with a lender foreclosing where there are legitimate economic reasons to do so, and the alternative is not doable, not possible.
How far
would make no difference.
How far out then would you expend this reasonableness doctrine? If it's okay for 4 months, does the lender have to give a year's forbearance to see if the crops come in, or are we to draw a line in the sand, or what are we to take from this?
Well, in this case, 4 months, and I think the Farm Credit policy makes a pretty measured stand on that, Your Honor, where it measures restructuring against foreclosure. And in this case, it seems pretty clear. 4 months of restructuring to see if the wheat crop comes in and to hold a horse sale, as opposed to sudden death foreclosure. On restructuring, there's no cost at all to Farm Credit. They cannot possibly lose any equity. The collateral is not going to be perishable or disappear. All of those things go into that side of the equation. If, however, it was going to be extended over a winter, that's different. We've seen some very tough winters, 96, 97, a lot of cattle lost, very big risk to a lender to extend over that period of time. So I think it has to be case by case. Excuse me, Your Honor.
No, go ahead and finish what you're saying.
I think it has to be a case by case basis.
All right. And in this case, Farm Credit Service mailed to your clients informing them as they're required under the act, to an opportunity, giving them an opportunity to restructure their loans. Dugan's testified they received the letter, they didn't file a written request, and then secondly, they were mailed written notification of their right to mediate the loan with the South Dakota Department of Agriculture. And again, they didn't respond. So you're saying there should be built into the law the right to extend or to restructure your loan on a case-by-case basis, even though they don't file a written application to do so under the law?
Well, that's an excellent point. The way that was handled, Farm Credit mailed this paperwork to the Dugans. Nobody explained it to them. Nobody went through it with them. Their request...
Did they have an attorney at that time?
No. Their request was clearly on the record and in the file at Farm Credit. It's in writing in our exhibits here that Farm Credit wrote down their request for rescheduling. We request that the payment be moved to October 1. So everybody had it in writing, and everybody knew what it was. It wasn't difficult. It was a very clear statement. Then Farm Credit Officer came to the ranch July 11th, and he made it very clear to Dan and Beverly Dugan, sitting there in their kitchen, that we are going to foreclose on you, we are going to liquidate all of your assets, and we will not advance any money for the fall horse sale, and we will not pay the combiners, pay the freight on the wheat, we aren't going to do anything, we're just going to foreclose. So when they got the written request, they felt that Farm Credit knows what our request is for restructure. We know what their position is. I guess they have to do what they have to do. There's no point in us sending in a written request. On the second part of that, on mediation, it required a check of $40 to be sent back with that. They didn't have $40, and also they had to go to some place east for quite a ways to make the meeting. And so they called and declined to go. Also, I believe in their deposition testimony, they stated something to the effect that the position of Farm Credit was pretty clear, and it didn't appear that there would be any mediation or negotiations about it.
They have assets worth valued at $2.5 million, and they didn't have the $40 necessary to comply with the mediation request.
Their income was covered by liens, and that was shut off on May 10th, I believe it was, where Farm Credit exercised its security interest and enforced their UCC-1 financing statements. All proceeds have to be turned in then to Farm Credit, and you wouldn't have any money back for living or operating expenses unless Farm Credit agreed. And they made certain requests for that kind of release of funds, but they were all denied. And yes, by that time, they were totally out of money, didn't have food, didn't have groceries. They were getting by with help from the area as far as fuel and so forth. And that's how they got the wheat crop out, is local help and local credit. They did get the wheat crop out, and they did send $54,000 to Farm Credit, and Farm Credit accepted that money. That was September 9th. And they accepted the money, applied it on the notes, and I think the cases are clear there that that cures whatever default or late payment complaint there may have been.
Well, Mr. Hurley, you know, the $40 may be a minor point here, but it seems incredulous to me that they found a takeout financer and to not avail themselves of that opportunity because you claim they didn't have $40 seems a little stretched to me.
And that's a point well taken, Your Honor. For you and I think that's probably something we would really try to do, and we've always tried to do that, get to those mediations and talk to the parties and get some conversation going. But I think it illustrates the mindset they were in. They felt they were strapped, and they felt they didn't have any options here, that they were going to get taken out and taken down and completely liquidated.
They knew they could go get they knew they could go get somebody else to refinance them, didn't they? I mean, supposedly, they're sitting on something worth $2.5 million, and they're probably wealthier than anybody in this room, and they just kind of sit there and don't do anything, you know?
Well, wealthy in terms of assets, it's like being house poor, I suppose, and then no money in the wallet. They did make...
Like Justice Zinner said, they were able to go refinance with somebody else. Somebody else loaned them the money against their $2.5 million worth of assets, right?
That was in 03, yes.
Completely paid off the loan to FCS.
Paid off in full. But it took a while to get from 02 to 03 and get that accomplished. It took a number of stops, and it took a number of applications, and it's not an easy thing to do, because of course all of our banking friends say, well, why didn't you get along with Farm Credit? It's just not an easy thing to do.
Your time has expired, Mr. Hurley.
Thank you. But yes, they did get that done. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Engel, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Tim Engel. I'm an attorney from here in Pierre and represent Farm Credit Services. One of the questions that was asked early on by the court was, are there any genuine issues of material fact? And I would submit to the court that there are no genuine issues of material fact. And in fact, I would invite the court to pay close attention to the record when you compare it to the assertions that have been made by the Dugans in their briefs and again here this morning. For example, there's a reference to cattle being available to pay debts. When I asked Mr. Dugan about what he had available to pay debts during his deposition, there was no mention of cattle. There's a statement here this morning that the Dugans paid $11,000 or nearly $12,000 to Farm Credit for the extension on note 201. In fact, what they did, and the record is very clear on this, is they made the past due payment on note 151, and they paid the interest, which was due, on note 101. Those are the facts under the record. There's nothing in the record about, again, this is a minor point, but there's nothing in the record about them not having the $40 to partake in the mediation.
What about the fact the trial court found unreasonable conduct here? What about that fact? That seems to me to be material.
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, that that's not a material fact. And I don't want to get into the what's a disputed fact and what's a disputed fact if they aren't material facts. But to answer the court's question, I think the law is very clear that the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing cannot be used to override an express provision in a contract. Every one of the notes that the Dugans signed say quite explicitly that if there is a default, Farm Credit could foreclose. They also say quite explicitly that Farm Credit has no duty, no obligation to extend them, revise them, anything else. No duty, no obligation. So if this court were to conclude that the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing could be used to, in some circumstances, force Farm Credit to revise its notes by extending the payment date, or in essence, overrule those provisions of those documents that say they can foreclose in the event of a default, then the implied covenant has overruled an express term of those documents in each case. And at that, I submit, the cases are very, very clear, including Garrett. The cases are very, very clear that that's not allowed.
What was the trial court alluding to specifically when I know the judge mentioned it two or three times that this was unreasonable on the part of the bank. What was he alluding to?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I can only speculate. I'm speculating that he was thinking that if he were Farm Credit, he would have given the extension. That's the only speculation that I have.
Were redemption periods applicable to this foreclosure?
They were on the real estate foreclosure.
Okay.
And that's that brings me to another point Mr. Hurley raised. He used the term sudden death foreclosure. In terms of the personal property foreclosure, actually didn't start until several months after. It started in January or February of the next year.
So the crops were in and the horses could have been sold by then.
That's correct, Your Honor. And, of course, there's the one-year redemption period on the real estate. There is no, in a real estate mortgage foreclosure, there's no sudden death foreclosure. They would have had the year right of redemption. Which brings me to another point that was raised in the Dugan's reply brief that I want to rebut, if I may, just quickly.
Are you telling us they got the 4 months?
Oh, yes, absolutely. They did not, the Dugan's did not receive the notice of acceleration on note 201, which was the real estate note, until October 2nd. It was a day after the deadline that they wanted.
Which but was their operating line was shut down.
Their operating line was shut down. That's
shut down in May.
No, that was, Your Honor, the operating line was shut off in late August. The Farm Credit in May exercised its right to require that the proceeds from its collateral be turned over to it, which is allowed under the security agreement.
Did the trial court make a finding of that Dugan's assets were valued by the bank at $2.5 million?
I don't recall specifically if the trial court did that or not. Of course, this was on a motion for summary judgment, so I suppose technically the trial court should not have been making any findings. But I think that's undisputed in the record that the Dugan's total assets were worth considerably more than what Farm Credit Services was owed. That's an undisputed fact.
Well, then isn't that what the trial court's getting at on unreasonable conduct? In other words, if there's $2.5 million worth of assets there, give or take, you know, a couple hundred thousand or whatever, isn't it unreasonable conduct for FCS not to make an extension or not to give them time to reasonably pay off their obligation and to meet their deadline? In other words, to immediately throw the property into foreclosure, even though it's going to take a year for redemption, isn't that unreasonable conduct?
Well, Your Honor, that may well be what the trial court was thinking. The trial court may have been approaching this purely from an asset-based lending approach. And if that were the only way that lending was done, perhaps there would be some basis for the trial court to say that. That's not the only basis, though, that lending is done these days. And we learned those, as a matter of fact, Mr. Linus testified about that in his deposition. We learned those lessons in the 80s that you don't do that because land values and property values can drop dramatically and in a very short period of time. We also use cash flow-based lending, and the customer's character is also a consideration. And I'm not impugning the Dugan's character. That's not my intention. But it's very clear, and the court has alluded to this already, that the Dugan's were extremely uncooperative. They didn't take advantage of their Ag Credit Act rights. They didn't participate in mediation. They testified they didn't participate in mediation because they thought it was fruitless. Even when I asked them, well, aren't you going to have a third-party impartial mediator here to visit with you and to try to work this out? Well, they still thought it was fruitless. And I would respectfully take issue with the statement that they were immediately thrown into foreclosure. Because this is Farm Credit Services, there is at least one extra step that's required before it can start a foreclosure. And that is required under the Agricultural Credit Act of 1987. That's the notice they received, which is Exhibit 7 and 7A. And that's a 45-day period on top of the state mandatory mediation period. So it wasn't, you know, as Justice Gilbertson noted, the default. Well, I suppose, and then you add on top of that the fact that they asked for and received the two-month extension. So the default for non-payment happened on May 1. They got the ACA notice, the actual notice, or they got the mediation notice. The actual notice of acceleration then wasn't until October 2nd, quite some time later. So
okay,
it's not possible to have a sudden
I assume problem. You've heard the old saying that the law does not favor a forfeiture, right?
Yes.
And the law abhors a strict foreclosure. And so really, if there's those kind of assets available to Farm Credit Services to pay this debt, what's another 2 months going to make? In other words, it's almost like there's a technicality of a payment's got to be due on the first, and if you miss that one day, you can begin the process of the foreclosure, and it does seem like it's unreasonable conduct, which would maybe give rise to a genuine material issue of fact.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, just a couple of points. First, there would not be a forfeiture in this case. The Dugans have cited Brown versus Powell for that proposition, but that confuses two different kinds of foreclosures. Brown versus Powell was a contract for deed foreclosure case, and in that particular case, the court noted a long-standing line of cases that a strict foreclosure in a contract for deed foreclosure is not favored because that could result in a forfeiture when the vendee, the purchaser on the contract, has substantial equity in the property. Because, of course, as the court knows...
And so we aren't talking strict foreclosure, and I misspoke on that point, but we're talking foreclosure when you foreclose on the mortgage.
True. And I guess, Your Honor, if I may, the difference is in a strict foreclosure in a contract for deed, I, as the vendor, would get the property back, and the purchaser would lose all their equity in the property, and that would be it. They have a short right of redemption, whatever the court allows, and that's it. In a mortgage foreclosure, in a mortgage foreclosure by action in court, it's not as the Dugans claim, the Farm Credit gets to choose the purchaser and the purchaser gets a windfall. That's not how it works. By statute, there would be a sheriff's sale, an auction sale conducted by the sheriff. The Dugans could bid, Farm Credit could bid, third parties could bid. I'm going to assume that if there's all these hundreds of thousands of dollars of equity in that property, they're going to be third-party bidders. And if Farm Credit was owed $791,000, it would get that plus interest and attorney's fees, and that's all it would get. There is no windfall. And there is no forfeiture to the Dugans, because if there's something left over, it gets paid to the junior lien holders and then to the Dugans. So I guess I would submit, Your Honor, on the forfeiture issue, that's a bit of a red herring here, because it doesn't apply it in a mortgage foreclosure situation. On your question about going back to the reasonableness and missing a payment date, and I believe, Your Honor, you refer to that as a technicality, I would submit that that goes back to virtually universally the law around the country, and again, even as stated by this court in Garrett, the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing cannot be used to overrule an express provision in a contract. That payment date, respectfully, is not a technicality. That's a term of the contract. That's when they're required to pay. And keep in mind also that all of these notes, again, say that the lender has no obligation to revise, to extend, anything of that nature. So if this court were to adopt the covenant of good faith and fair dealing, essentially as a defense, I guess, to a mortgage foreclosure, it is going to have to, respectfully, overrule those express terms of that agreement. Now, in the Garrett case, the court didn't come right out and say that, but the Garrett case did say that in one particular instance, BankWest did exactly what it said it was going to do, that Garretts were claiming that BankWest should have done something that was contrary to the express terms of the agreement, and therefore that could not be a breach of the implied covenant because it was contrary to the express terms of the agreement. And that, I think, Your Honors, is the law, as recognized throughout the country. The Eighth Circuit, in looking at Garrett, reached that same conclusion. This court has, prior to Garrett, had concluded that it was not going to superimpose the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing on the employment at will doctrine. And I would submit that I think that was at least in part because there is no contract of employment. There's nothing there there's no provision to superimpose this onto. So I think that's important. That's how I would respond, I guess, to the reasonableness and the reasonableness argument, is that could Farm Credit have extended that payment date further, perhaps? Would it have extended the payment date further? This is speculation, but I would say probably, if the Dugans had submitted a plan. I asked them several times during their depositions, what was your plan? Their plan was to wait till October 1st. That was it. They didn't propose to sell any real estate. They didn't propose a specific horse sale date. Nothing of that nature. They said, we want to wait till October 1st and see what happens. And as it turns out, And again, if you'll look at the, this is the, I'm relying on the facts as testified to by the Dugans. So we're applying the summary judgment standard. Of course, these are the facts in the light most favorable to them. They testified that their 2001 production all went to pay 2001 expenses. That's why they couldn't pay the 2002 payment. Well, by the end of 2002, say September of 2002, they still hadn't produced enough to pay the 2001 payment, yet presumably the funds that they were going to use to make the 2003 payment, they'd already spent. So to go back to something that Justice Gilbertson asked Mr. Hurley, where does this end? When was it going to end? This could go on forever. They had already spent the 2001 and 2002 production proceeds and couldn't make the 2002 payment. So where was the spring of 2003 payments, where were they going to come from? You know, this goes on and on, I guess is my point. And I would submit that if the court were to adopt this argument, then we're headed down a slippery slope, and who knows where this will end up. And it would also put trial courts and this court in a position of second guessing and having substantial litigation in every foreclosure.
Help me understand, I'm a little confused on some of the facts here. One of the complaints that the Dugans have is that when the bank had some discretion where to apply the money that they did pay, they applied it to certain loans and not to others, and thus caused, for example, causing, I think, them to shut down the operating note. And you responded to that by saying that there was a letter from Mr. Hurley, and I wanted to know if you could explain that.
Yes, I'd be happy to, Your Honor. And again, I want to be cautious. There really are no genuine issues of material fact in this case. There are none. There have been some assertions made by the Dugans that, frankly, are not supported by the record. And in the brief, I pointed those out, and I pointed a couple more out this morning. If you look at the undisputed facts, take and look at the Dugans' testimony, the exhibits and the Dugans' testimony, so applying the summary judgment standard, we're going to take the facts in the light most favorable to the Dugans. On that particular question, Your Honor, in August, in late August of 2002, Note 101, which was the operating line of credit, was turned off essentially by Farm Credit. There's an explanation for why that was done in the record, which stands unrebutted, I might add, and which is consistent with the terms of the note, and frankly is consistent with common sense and with this court's ruling in the Bon I case, where you said that a bank is free to determine the risks it's willing to accept. At that time, in August of 2002, the Dugans had missed the note 152, I believe it was, payment. They missed two payments on note 201, and I believe it missed one other. Essentially, they were in default on at least two notes. They had refused to take part in the ACA process. They refused to take part in mediation. That's what had happened, and if you'll look at Mr. Bernhardt's affidavit, he explains why he did what he did. It was shortly after that, in early September, that Mr. Hurley sent a letter to Farm Credit. It is in the record. If I recall correctly, it's an exhibit to Mr. Dugan's deposition. Mr. Hurley sent a letter to Farm Credit, sending some funds. I believe it was a little over $50,000, $52,000, something like that. Mr. Hurley said that Dan suggests, that is the word he used. Well, first he said, I'm not sure it makes any difference where you apply these funds. That's in his letter. And then he says, Dan suggests that you apply these funds in a certain way, $14,000 to note 152, which at that point was 4 months past due, and the balance of $35,000 to note 201, which was the real estate note. Those were Mr. Hurley's and Mr. Dugan's suggestions. Now, again, keeping in mind that the standard in summary judgment is we're going to interpret the facts in the light most favorable to the Dugans, let's assume that instead of suggestion that was demand and that it was wrongful for Farm Credit not to do that. If Farm Credit had done exactly what Mr. Dugan said, or had suggested, it would have brought note 201 current. There would have been $15,000 left unpaid on excuse me, I misspoke. That would have brought note 152, which is one of the chattel notes, current. There would have been another $15,000 left to pay on note 201, which is the real estate note, and there wouldn't have been anything left for operating. It would have maxed, note 101 at that point was within $500 of being at the maximum principal balance. There would not have been anything left for them to operate. And you'll, if you'll know it, you read the Dugan's briefs carefully, they seem to want to have it both ways. Well, gee, if you would have done this, we would have only had $15,000 left to pay on the real, left to pay on the real estate note, plus we could have had our horse sale. Later in their brief, they argue that, well, because you cut off our line of credit, we couldn't have our horse sale because we didn't have any money. Well, that would have been the same net effect. So using that standard, what are the material undisputed facts? It would not have made any difference. And on top of that, Your Honor, I would submit that, one, it was a suggestion, it was not a demand. Two, Mr. Dugan testified in his deposition that he agreed with the way it was applied. And I've cited that specifically in our brief. And three, those monies were the proceeds from the sale of the collateral for the notes they were applied to. It was from the sale of wheat, which was the collateral for note 152, note 101, and any of the other notes that start with the one. That's what it was the collateral for. It wasn't the collateral for note 201. The collateral for note 201 is the real estate. So it was applied to the note for which it was the collateral, which is a common sense, I guess, banking practice. I see my time is up, and I thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Engel. Mr. Hurley, you have 10 minutes, sir.
As the year turned out in 2002, the Dugans were able to perform. They did produce a wheat crop. They were able to combine and truck that wheat to town and turn it into money, and they paid $54,000 to Farm Credit. Farm Credit accepted that payment, and they applied $14,000 plus a few dollars to note 152 and brought that out of default. And the balance of the money, approximately $40,000, was applied on note 101, which is the operating note.
Mr. Engel states basically that you got your 4 months.
Pardon?
The way I hear Mr. Engel saying, because of when they moved against the personal property and the redemption period on the real estate, you, in essence, got the 4 months you were asking for. What's your response?
I think response was the same as what the court had pointed out during that question and answer period, and that's one of the footnotes in their brief that, well, what are they complaining about? They really got the 4 months. We didn't start foreclosure until October, which mid-October, which gave them the 4 months. The problem with that is that May 10th, they were instructed to send all proceeds to Farm Credit, and no proceeds would be released to them for fuel or operating or food or anything unless Farm Credit agreed, and they did not.
So you're saying reasonableness not only includes the obligation of the banker to forbear on foreclosure, it also requires them to continue on with operating a line of operating credit?
In this case, the operating line of credit, note 101, was not in default. When the wheat money came in and $40,000 was paid down on note 101, under the terms of that contract, the Dugan should have been able to withdraw that out to pay the expenses of the fall horse sale so they could have a horse sale, to pay the expenses of putting in the fall wheat crop so they could get that done, and to pay the balance out of on the real estate note. All of those things were their entitlement, their right under that contract. And we submit that Farm Credit breached that contract when they refused to let them withdraw any of that money that was put there that was their wheat money, and they were entitled to draw that back out and use it as they saw fit.
What about the provision that allowed them to shut off the operating line if they felt financially insecure?
Yes, and I think there is a excellent genuine issue of material fact as to whether or not that was a reasonable decision on their part with the kind of proven equity that was there. And yes, they were saying that the Dugans weren't performing, but they did perform. They did in a drought year, they produced $66,000, which they sent to Farm Credit. A lot of ranches weren't able to do anything that year. But they did do that, and they had lined up a horse sale, and they had an inventory of 100 registered purebred horses ready to go to sale. But Farm Credit wouldn't give them the upfront cost that's necessary to put on a registered horse sale. And of course, then that wasn't possible. The key to it is, yes, back to your question, Chief Justice, that the foreclosure on the real estate did not start until October. That's correct. But the money was shut off in May, and the starve out began, and you just can't do anything when you get down the roadways. And we would submit that on the record that we have, there are genuine issues of material fact. There are issues of law. The basic issue of law, I believe, is whether or not unreasonable conduct is encompassed within the doctrine of good faith. The trial court noted that the general rule of law is that a bank is required to adhere to the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing toward its customers. The position of the bank is that they want the legal authority to be unreasonable. And I don't think that's ever been the law in this state as to looking at the actions of either party. They need to be reasonable. They need to be based solidly on good facts, not be arbitrary and not be capricious. And
what about the argument of, if we were to accept the good faith and fair dealing argument that you have proposed here today, that it would actually overrule the terms of the contract?
No, what it's doing in these contracts, and you'll see it when you read these promissory notes and mortgages, it says that if I'm late on my payment, then the bank has the option at its discretion to call all of the money due or not, or it can do something else that it wants to do. And that's where good faith comes in when you read this court's opinions on good faith, and I think they are pretty correct. They operate in a contract not to change the term, but to fill those gaps. And what they are is a governor saying that the Dugans can't be completely arbitrary without any reason of what they're doing, but on the other hand, the lenders in the state cannot either. They must make their decisions based on the facts, and they must decide, as this court said in Mahan, on legitimate commercial reasons. And we submit to this court that Farm Credit had no economic commercial reason to do what it did in this case. And back to this operating line again, where the wheat money was used to pay down the operating line under the terms of that contract, then the borrowers should have been able to withdraw that $40,000 out and use it to complete their business. That note 101 was not in default, and the payment was not due on that until up in 03 on into the next year. So we would submit that was a breach of contract to shut that off, and we see in Exhibit 38 a colloquy going back and forth between Sioux Falls and Omaha offices where they were still trying to shut that off September 10th, which was the day after we requested the money to be able to put into the wheat crop. And they were still trying to get that operating note shut down. We would ask the court to reverse the trial court and to return this case back so that the Dugans have their day in court on these issues. And we would submit to the court that we are not asking this court for an extension or expansion of the doctrine of good faith. All of these principles have been in effect for years. Everybody understands them, and it's just a matter of applying them. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hurley.
One question, Mr. Hurley.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Shouldn't the Dugans, when they went in and paid off the gold and the mortgages, shouldn't they have gone into court and got the approval of the court to proceed on their counterclaim? In other words, not waive any rights? And I realize that apparently this is not being asserted by Farm Credit, But when they go in and they're being foreclosed on, and they go in with new money and pay off all the debts, all the mortgages and everything, aren't they, isn't that an accord and satisfaction, wiping out all prior disputes?
It was accord and satisfaction and payment in full as to all promissory notes and termination of the UCC financing statements, termination and satisfaction of the mortgage and the liens on the chattels. But there was no provision in that payoff requested or received that they satisfy their counterclaim. And so what happened at the closing was a request was made, how much does Farm Credit say that we owe? That figure was put on the table and the new lender wrote a check and said, okay, give me your satisfaction documents and now I'll hold the mortgage and then I'll soon go forward.
So you say the counterclaim was not released or waived or given up or anything?
That's correct. That was recommended by the trial court when we went back in. And the trial court reflects that in the court's opinion, which is tab one to our initial brief. And the court states that what remains is the counterclaim of the Dugans. All other issues of the plaintiff set forth in the plaintiff's complaint are moot and taken care of.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hurley. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.